Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, April 29th, 2016. South Sudan has a new transitional government. And what do the new leaders have to do to make the transitional government work? We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The 30 ministers of the new transitional government of national unity were sworn in today, bringing together politicians from the SPLM in opposition, the government, opposition parties, and the SPLM former detainees. We have several reports for you today on the new government, beginning with Waki Simon Wudu, who was at the swearing-in and has this report for VOA from Juba.
The ministers of the new government of transitional unity were sworn in today after their names were announced yesterday in a presidential decree read on the South Sudan television. They took the oath of office this morning before President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar. Both leaders spoke shortly after the swearing-in ceremony was over, reiterating their pledge to cooperate and move the country out of its economic crisis and insecurity. President Kiir called for teamwork.
The responsibility imposed on us by the agreement needs each and every one of us to contribute to the stabilization of our country. There is no blame that it was you who did this or who did that. If we do that, we will not move an inch. But if we forget about all what happened and start with a clean page, we will move.
Machar says addressing the country's chronic insecurity is a top priority.
Challenge of security is the biggest. So we are now in a cabinet. It's our task to ensure that this challenge, we overcome it sooner, not only in Juba, all over the Republic. So once we stabilize the security, our economy will be stabilized. We should work to ensure that the South Sudanese pound.
The new cabinet is comprised of 30 ministers. Mr. Kiir appointed 16, the SPLM IO appointed 10, and the SPLM former detainees and other opposition political parties appointed 2 each. Many of the government's appointees are returning ministers. Among some of the familiar faces with the government are Kwal Manyang Juk, who headed the Ministry of Defense, Michael Makwelweth, who headed the Information Ministry, and Obutu Mamur Mete, who headed the Security and Service Ministry. Among the new faces includes Dr. Diu Mathok, Minister of Energy and Mining, Dr. Diop Bichok, Minister of Petroleum, and Mabior Garang de Mabior, son of South Sudanese hero, the late Dr. John Garang de Mabior, heads the Ministry of Water Resources and Irrigation. Simon Monoja, Associate Professor at the University of Juba in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology, says he does not trust the leadership of the new cabinet because many ministers are familiar faces who have done nothing to help the country in the past.
There's no difference. It's the same people who led us into war, and now they're back. I hope they will begin to think anew. Let them think anew, not the old way.
Monoja says the new cabinet had better demonstrate real leadership if it is going to regain the trust of the South Sudanese people.
Let them do the right thing. We don't want this going back to the bush fight when you are removed, and then you create insecurity.
Monoja says the government needs to end the killings of innocent civilians and ensure there are no militia across the parts of the country. He says it will be good if the government put focus on one problem, insecurity, and address it. Monoja says addressing the insecurity across the country will give chance to all the other sectors to gain trust and flourish. For VOA News, I am Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A South Sudanese analyst says now that President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar have formed a transitional government, they must live to the people's expectations. Dr. James Okuk, a political scientist at Juba University, says the two leaders must learn from their past mistakes and not allow the country to slide back into conflict again. From Juba, Mugume Davis-Wakarinj has more.
Professor James Okuk says the formation of the cabinet by members of both parties means that the two parties are serious about peace.
The fact that it has brought all the heavyweight politicians in, it tells you now it is a heavyweight government and whose decision will not be undermined. And it is a government that is going to be recognized by the international community and all friends of South Sudan. So it means the goodwill could be generated, and a peace agreement could go ahead, even if it is slow, but at least it will progress, and that is what people want.
President Kiir issued a decree last night dissolving his government and announcing the formation of the new cabinet. Okuk says the two sides must honor the provisions of the August agreement if they are to avoid sliding back into the crisis.
Dr. Riek has come back as a very powerful the first vice president. He's not as the time he was here. He was not so powerful. He didn't have these powers which he had now. So his office is independent from the president office, and it has independent, powerful powers given to him by the agreement. The same to the Council of Ministers. The current Council of Ministers is also more powerful than the president and even than the first vice president. They can dictate whatever these two try to do, which are not in consonant with the peace agreement.
Okuk also says people have high expectations of the new government, and the two leaders must deliver.
They are not supposed to be in opposition. They are supposed to be in partnership. So the fact that all of them are there, there will not be any strong opposition outside. So they will all exert effort to build on the affairs of the government. So those of Dr. Lam, they will do their best to make sure that the peace agreement is implemented. And that is what they are supposed to do. Dr. Riek, the same. Salva Kiir, the same.
The two sides are also to form a new parliament in the coming days. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis-Ruakarinj in Juba.
The appointment of ministers marks a milestone in the implementation of the peace agreement, but one analyst says there are a lot of familiar faces in the transitional government. Agostino Tingmayai, the director of research at the Juba-based Sud Institute, agrees that the new list has a lot of overlap from the previous cabinet. He says while some are qualified, others do not fit the bill.
And that it's quite problematic for some of us, given the fact that it's you think of a transition that's going to lead to stability and peace in the country and prosperity. But that's not what we know of some of the ministers that have just been appointed.
What was one name that surprised you the most?
One example is David Yao Yao, General David Yao Yao. I was quite surprised for two reasons. One is that this guy has no experience whatsoever in terms of managerial work. That's one. Second one is that this is a guy that most people don't necessarily like, given his history of being involved in violence in Dongle State. I had seen, say, for example, the current Minister of Finance, there have been a lot of complaints about him actually not running the country's affairs, right, especially the economy. And that it's seen in so many ways. You have embassies abroad not getting the funds, running for 5 months without being paid, you name it. And he still appeared on the list.
We saw that Taban Dengai was appointed to the Minister of Mining. Your reaction about that?
I thought he was going to be the Minister of Petroleum. Again, he's an old face. I don't know to what extent he is going to be able to deliver in that front. Mining seems to be an emerging economic sector in South Sudan, given the fact that the oil industry is becoming less lucrative now. And so it's an important docket for the country. Whether or not General Taban will deliver in that arena, history shows that that's not the case. But again, we're hopeful that they're given the war, that some of the leaders have learned their lessons.
Another familiar face is Lama Cole. He's been appointed as the Minister of Agriculture and Food Security. Your take on that?
Dr. Lam. It's an experienced gentleman. He has handled himself very well during this critical time. And I think given his commitment to this country, it's the appointment that I think was right in its place.
And Agostino, there's been a lot of mixed reaction on the appointment of Mabior Garang de Mabior. Of course, he's the son of the late John Garang de Mabior. What is your reaction to that? Do you think this was the right move to appoint him as minister or not?
Dr. Riak is trying his best to actually balance his team in the government of national unity. He has done well in terms of diversity, especially regional and ethnic diversity. But that's just about it. Mabior Garang, even with the fact that he's late Dr. Garang's son, to me, is not qualified to lead an institution of a public institution like the ministry that he has just been given.
Now let's move on to the subject of female ministers. A lot of people have said that they're actually proud of both sides for making sure that women are represented. Do you agree with that take?
According to our constitution, the minimum is 25%. And the previous administrations, it have not been met at all in any institution. But again, we need to look at it this way. We have 30 ministers and ministries. I don't think that's enough. There should be a question of the quality of people that are getting in there. But some of the women that I saw there just don't cut it for the delivery of services in this country.
That was Agostino Ting Mayai, the director of research at the Sood Institute, speaking to me earlier from Washington. The members of the Troika, the United States, United Kingdom, and Norway issued a statement today saying they welcome the long-awaited formation of South Sudan's transitional government. They also welcome the statements by President Kiir and Machar calling for cooperation, reconciliation, and peaceful coexistence. The Troika is calling on South Sudan's leaders to continue their spirit of cooperation and to start what it calls the difficult task of rebuilding their country. The statement says, while formation of the transitional government is a step forward, with thousands dead, widespread atrocities committed, and millions displaced from their homes during the conflict, this is no time for celebration. It says the international community stands united in urging the transitional government to start to work for the people of South Sudan, saying the fighting must stop. We asked some South Sudanese in Juba what they thought about the transitional government of national unity being formed, and here's what they had to say.
Yeah, I'm called Malice James Simon. I'm so happy because our man has come back home. Sure, I feel that at least his coming has to change the situation here in Juba. Only what we need peace, and the economic crisis has to come to normal as it is used to be.
My name is Flora Dennis. Actually, I'm happy about this government because everything is going to be okay. It's not like before. So what I can say is that we need peace and security in our home. It's very important because when you do your own thing, thieves will not come and attack you.
Yeah, my name is Martin Moga. I'm in Juba. Now I see like the promotion of the new government have given us some changes. Now I hope in the future we are going to achieve development and some places, even like the remote even will be developed. Maybe by the transparency of this new government, everything will change and make life easier to us.
Okay, I'm called Fatuma Hassan. I'm really happy because Riak is back. They should let everyone go to school. Let them help everything be to normal. Like currencies should load down so that every parent can afford the fees for the children to go to school. Because I'm seeing many of the children are not going to school due to insecurity.
I'm Faida Grace. I'm very grateful for the formation of the new government because we have really suffered for a long time as a sin. Because of the economic crisis, losing of relatives, displacement from your own home to stay in the camps, it really disappointed us a lot. Since the coming of Dr. Riek Machar to Juba, I am very pleased that I know peace is going to stable in South Sudan.
Those are the voices of some South Sudanese offering their views on South Sudan's new unity cabinet. Our thanks to Mugume Davis-Walker-Rinch for that audio. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. An update on the deadly violence at universities in Sudan. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
If you had to choose between buying nice clothes or nice shoes, what would you do?
I'll have to choose with buying nice clothes because I can match one shoe with so many different types of clothes. So I prefer buying nice clothes instead of shoes.
I'll set the two items on the scale of preference and choose the one that I prefer most.
I would rather buying shoes because I like walking a lot. So yeah, I can't walk without shoes.
Okay, I'd go for both because you have to suit the environment with the clothes, and so I'll go for both.
That one depends. There's sometimes if you find you have enough clothes and you don't have enough shoes.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Local and international human rights groups are condemning the killing of students on university campuses across Sudan and are demanding the government to hold the perpetrators accountable. As Nabil Biagio reports from Khartoum, two students have been killed in the last 10 days.
The Sudanese Solidarity Committee has documented at least 23 student deaths at universities across Sudan since the start of President Omar al-Bashir's government in 1989. The latest deadly incident occurred a week apart. 18-year-old Abu Bakr Hassan Muhammad Taha was gunned down on the campus of Kordofan University on April 19th, and Muhammad al-Sadiq was shot and killed on the campus of Umdurman Ahliya University just 2 days ago. Sadiq's killing sparked street protests across parts of Khartoum. Both young men were shot dead during confrontations between students loyal to the ruling National Congress Party and opposition party students. The human rights group says Sudanese intelligence agents have especially targeted Darfuri students who protest against the genocide and near-constant aerial bombardments of Darfur by government warplanes. Amnesty International condemned the killings, saying the brutal killing of an 18-year-old Sudanese university student by intelligence agents April 19th must be urgently investigated. Muhammad Yusuf, a senior staff member at the University of Khartoum, says most of the violence on student campuses in recent days has been caused by the government.
This particular wave of violence, which usually lead to death of students, the principal maker and instigator is the government itself. That because the government is culturing and nurturing what we can call the culture of violence in the Sudan.
Yusuf says the violence on university campuses is sponsored by the government and carried out by students affiliated with the ruling National Congress Party against other students who are considered political opponents.
In each university, there is a unit, official unit, for jihad, what they call jihad unit. It has its official existence as part and parcel of the institutions in any university where they have arms and they have sessions for training.
Yusuf says it is no secret that the government provides arms to their student wings at various universities.
When university students get into conflict, these students, the government students, usually resort to their arms because they have been trained and encouraged to use these weapons under their disposal to make jihad against whoever stands against the government.
Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal calls the student killings, quote, a sad occurrence.
We are very sorry for that. On our some of our universities, this is the students, you know, struggle when there is any elections for choosing their union. This now and then happens, and which is a bad thing, actually.
Bilal says the government is investigating the killings of the two students to bring the killers to justice and insists his government had nothing to do with the murders.
And now discontent, the university is closed, and we are going to investigate about this, you know, exactly. But it's not from the government, but from the students themselves.
Bilal blames what he calls too much political freedom on university campuses for the violence, and says the government is going to do something about it.
They have got free environment, they have the relations here and there, but between the students, but more regulations and more close observation from the government will try to stop these things happening in our university.
Both Kordofan University and Omdurman Ahli University remain closed. It is not clear when the universities will be reopened. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Activists in WOW are demanding that civil society organizations be more closely scrutinized. They accuse most community-based organizations, or CBOs, of employing many close relatives. CBOs gather today to review the new law on non-governmental organizations, which says such groups should avoid employing family members to avoid a conflict of interest. Demo Silva has this report for VOA from WOW.
Members of civil society and community-based organizations in WOW are critical about the way some of their institutions are structured and the employment criteria used. Coletta Ako from the Vulnerable Children's Group says auditing such groups is difficult because there are inherent conflicts of interest based on the people the leaders choose to hire.
When we are doing the work, there should be evaluation, there should be monitoring, reporting, auditing. When auditing comes, they will find that you are just working straightforward. But when you employ all people of your side, you can't account them. So it will be difficult for an audit to come and audit the society, whereby they will find that it is only one tribe or one clan or one people who are just doing the work.
Critics say civil society organizations aggressively lobby for funds from outside aid organizations and other donors to help the community. Oftentimes, the money is pocketed by particular individuals. Stephen Robo is a state coordinator for the Juba-based Community Empowerment for Progress organization. Speaking in Arabic, Robo says, with passage of the 2016 NGO Act 2016, which President Kiir signed into law in February, civil society organizations must be held accountable for the money they spend.
I want us as organizations to move out from this narrow thinking, where you initiate an organization and employ all your relatives as staff. This will not help us when it comes to the accountability. There are internal and external audits required by donors, but also we want the government to make its check so that we become accountable. Let us learn to be honest.
John Akile Adam from the Sabrine Association agrees that civil society organizations must make sure that only qualified personnel are hired. He says organizations should also hire based on non-discriminatory policies.
If the organization wants to deliver service that will benefit the community, their structure should represent all the community within their staff working with them.
But Anne Danielle Ali, State Director of Education, Child, Gender and Social Welfare, says the NGO Act states that civil society groups should hire mostly nationals.
According to the law, those organizations, if they want to employ somebody, they should consider give concentration to the national people. But if they have lack, they did not find somebody who have capacity to do the work which they expect, they have right to bring people from outside. This is the only criteria which the law talk about it.
Civil society activists say that with the passage of the South Sudan 2016 NGO Act, they now have official guidance on their hiring activities. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WOW.
Citizens of Zara County of Budwe State are welcoming the creation of more counties in the new state. This past week, State Governor Patrick Rafael Zamoy issued an order elevating 7 payams to county level, bringing the total number of counties in the state to 12. The governor says this will reduce the state's high unemployment rate, especially among youth. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
Robert Raphael Ruati, a citizen in the newly created Sakura County, says he is grateful to Governor Major General Patrick Raphael Zamoi and President Salva Kiir, saying residents will benefit from new county status.
People of Sakura will benefit from that county in the way that the service will be closer to them, even the employment. The youth who are sitting idle, they will be employing, they will not go very far to look for the work. Even there will be no any migration from the village to the towns. I think people from the towns will start migrating back to the village because for the employment.
Ruati says, since his county is near the South Sudanese border with the Democratic Republic of Congo, it will be one of the fastest developing counties in the state due to trade. He says, because of that, the hundreds of people who left the county should return home to help build the new county. Santino David, a citizen of the newly created Boskwengbi County, says Nzara deserves the formation of two counties. He says residents will work hard to make Boskwengbi County a prosperous place to live for all residents.
Definitely, we are going to be directly benefiting from the county because the services that I mentioned in my talk is going to be brought closer to people. Services like health services, like schools, like infrastructure, and the community will directly benefit from this exercise.
Elia Richard Box, the long-serving commissioner of Nzara County, welcomes the creation of the new counties.
We receive it with excitement because this is a development. And this is what God gave it through our hero, late John Garang, take time to people.
Box called a meeting of officials from the two new counties earlier this week to talk about the way forward. He urged the people of the two counties to work as a team.
And the message to them is that this is just an administrative distribution. It should not divide us. It is not. It should not create hatred or discrimination. We are one people, and then we, everything we have to do as a great Nzara, not Boskwengbi Sakura, so that we see that our three counties can prosper in Budwe State.
Budwe State Governor Patrick Raphael Zamoi says the new counties will be sustainable with the support they receive from the state government. He says the creation of the counties will reduce unemployment, especially among youths who were carrying out attacks on unarmed civilians.
By creating these counties, it's going to create more opportunities in various places. Like you'll be looking for the clerks, you'll look for the administrators, not only the commissioners. You'll look for many others to fill the gap in each county. So this huge job opportunity will at least now help us to reduce the number of just jobless people.
He says this will also enable residents to be optimistic about how to develop their counties rather than loitering in the streets. According to the Local Government Act 2009, a county must have a population of between 700,000 and 100,000 people, be economically viable for 35% to 45% of the annual budget, and have at least 3 to 4 payams. The newly created counties are Mopoi, Riubu, Nandi, Bangazegino, Boskwengbi, Sakura, and Bongosu. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba. Hossa, hossa.
And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Heart Attack by Radio and Weasel. We've been listening to Radio and Weasel with the song Heart Attack. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington, wishing you a safe and enjoyable weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.